Further discussion. Senator from the 14th, for what purpose do you rise?
Mr. President, to inquire of the senator from the 7th.
Senator from the 7th, do you yield?
I do.
He does. Proceed.
Thank you. Senator, I know that you and I had a discussion about this appointment. At first, your main concern was about filling a position that had been void for quite a long time, and you wanted to ensure there was a voice from your side of the state. And I indicated that I was going to review every single candidate that was up. I had a conversation finally after your appointment did come to the state capitol to have an interview. And I was impressed. And again, I'll just be really quick in this. I was looking for independence and thought. And I was concerned about that because there is currently a lack of independent thought on the State Board of Education. As you know, I serve on a school board, and it is really important that we do not have individuals who are co-signing every single thing that a superintendent or, for this situation, a commissioner is trying to implement without conversation with different groups of people, and certainly not go beyond the authority of the legislature. So I just wanted to let you know that I have gone through, I have a file for Mr. Martin as well, and I listened to many of his concerns, and he does have a deep appreciation for the job that he may or may not get after our vote. That gives him $25 a meeting. But I just wanted to let you know, I hope that you can have representation from your part of the state, and I think that Mr. Martin is a good candidate.
Well, thank you, Senator. I appreciate you taking a moment to explain your process for reviewing Dr. Martin's qualifications and his independence and character. And I just want to, you know, I won't belabor. We've spent enough time this morning discussing this issue on the previous candidate. But I would just say, why does the statute say it must be a layperson? I believe that is to prevent a conflict of interest. So the governor doesn't choose somebody who is actively involved in a school board or as a superintendent of an existing school district and then bring them on the board and have them have undue influence over their particular area since they were an active participant. Dr. Martin has been retired for 6 years now. He has dissolved his professional bands to any interest that might exist. Education is ever-evolving. Knowledge is fleeting. Expertise must be renewed. To address the Common Core discussion, when asked about Common Core, he said, honestly, I only know what I've read. I haven't studied it. I haven't been engaged in it. And that is exactly an example of how a person can go from having a body of experience and knowledge to becoming lay in that subject because the subject is ever-evolving. It changes. And if you're, you know, if you asked him in 1998, what is the MSIP 1 standards, he probably would be able to articulate those pretty expressly. But today, to ask him what MSIP 5 is, having not had the experience, his expertise is no longer present, therefore making him lay. He has no bound interest that is going to present a conflict for him executing this job, and I think his experience is an asset, and we want people who understand what it is to be independent. And I love the comment earlier that if you don't know anything, you're liable to fall for anything. So
I think that
having someone who has been through a little bit of these conflicts in the past is only going to serve the state well and help us fix the problem that obviously exists.
And the last thing that I'll say, I do concur with the senator from the 15th. I'm glad that we had a very fruitful conversation. These are the kind of conversations that we should have in the upper chamber. I will also say, as we have been debating what the definition is of lay, we should also be interested in not having people who are going to be serving on these boards who have special agendas. They may be lay, but if they have special agendas that go against the democratic policies that we all adopt every single day, then that's a problem too. And fortunately, our Constitution doesn't deal with folks who have special agendas. So if we're going to deal with the definition of lay, let's deal with the individuals who have special agendas in the future. And there will be a seat that's going to be up in July of 2015. I cannot wait until that vacancy. And when that vacancy arrives, I'll be doing the same due diligence as I have for the three appointees to the State Board of Education as I have done now. But thank you so much, and I hope that you do get a voice from your part of the state. Thank you so much. Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you, Senator.
Senator from Barton.
President, to inquire the senator from the 24th.
Senator from the 24th, you yield to an inquiry. He does. Proceed.
Thanks, Senator. And I don't know, when the senator from the 1st and I had our exchange, I don't know how well you know. Do you know that area pretty well?
What?
The school district that he was talking about?
Yeah. It's Mr. Lenz is from Lindbergh, and actually he's on the school board now. So,
do you know anything about that school board? Are they all former teachers, former educators?
Well, they're elected. So, I mean, I think there's no restriction on, you're not appointed, you're elected. So you run for office. You can run for office as a, I think you can be a teacher and run for office.
Okay. Now, are you, other than the school boards, are you on any boards of directors?
Yeah, I currently serve on the board of trustees at Sandwich University High School.
Okay. All right. Are those all professional educators? Or?
No, absolutely not. So
what
kind I serve as a lay member. And I've served on university boards as well as a lay member and other boards as a lay person. And what an institution is trying to accomplish when they name a lay person is they seek out someone who, in their opinion, has proven themselves in some other aspect of life. They've had some, they've shown some capacity to make good decisions, to, you know, assimilate facts and come up with determinations. And quite frankly, they have plenty of, like in the education institutional boards I've served on, it's all full of educators. I mean, it's the administration of the school, and they have retired professors and retired teachers, and that the reason that they're appointing lay members is to get an entirely different perspective. And then what they want those lay members to do is to listen to the case that's being made, in this case by the educational, you know, insiders or experts, and then assess it how you might assess a decision out in the private sector. So, no, I mean, the senator from Buchanan did a great job, I mean, in asking me to continue to think through the definition of a lay person. And, you know, when you decide to have lay members on a board, it's with that purpose. It's not, and again, this idea that you couldn't find qualified people to serve on boards. Well, what you want to do is you want to find very accomplished people in other aspects of life to bring a different set of eyes to the decisions that that group is making.
Are you familiar? Have you looked at the makeup of the Public Service Commission?
I'm not. I mean, I know what it is. I don't know the actual makeup.
I just wonder if the same ones who thought that Mr. Lenz should be on the board, even though the definition of lay, or even though the determination of lay is in the legislation or in the statutes, would also agree that we need only those people who have backgrounds in communications and electricity to be on the Public Service Commission. I mean, because certainly they would bring a lot of expertise.
Yeah, I mean, what a lay person brings to the table is they bring a different perspective that's not been developed over time specific to the subject matter, specific to education or maybe a public utilities and things like that.
Now, I just looked up the board of directors of Boeing. Do you know how many people on the board of directors of Boeing have backgrounds in that industry?
Hardly any of them.
None. I don't know who was on the board of directors for Texaco, the company I worked for years, but I cannot remember a single member of that board that had oil business experience.
Right, the spirit of that decision to populate that universe of people with different perspective is a similar spirit, I think.
Yeah, and yet those institutions are very successful, and we're looking now at an institution that we're trying to figure out how to make it more successful, and we're continuing to do what we've done, which is why you have a board that says, wait a minute, why are we doing these same things? We have no ownership of these things. Let's try some other things. What about this? What about this? And then they ask the experts, and they'd love to have their input because they do know things that the board frequently doesn't know. But I think, you know, corporations have had boards of directors for decades, generations. Do you think they're getting it right, or do you think they should have all people in their industry on those boards?
Well, by their actions, they choose not to have all people in their industry. I mean, in the private sector, it's different because if you get it wrong, you fail and you go bankrupt. And if you get
it
right,
that doesn't happen in the public side.
Right.
Okay.
No. I mean, it's very clear to me. I just didn't see it, and I appreciate the Senator from Buchanan shining that light and making sure I continue to pay attention.
Well, I'm concerned that we're laying that aside too easily.
We have, and unfortunately, seven of us recognized it this morning, and 24 did not. So,
thank you, Senator. Thank you, Mr. President.
Further discussion. Senator from the 24th.
To inquire the Senator from the 7th.
Senator from the 7th, do you yield? He does. Proceed.
Thanks, Senator. So the one part of the testimony that I was most intrigued by with Dr. Martin yesterday. Oh, by the way, aren't you glad that Martin comes after Lenz?
What's that?
Aren't you glad that Dr. Martin came after Lenz today?
Yes, yes. Unquestionable.
I know. I'm sure the Senator from the 15th wish he had the Martin and you had the Lenz. But do you recall when I asked if Dr. Lenz had been part of a change in state standards?
Dr. Martin,
yeah.
Yes, I do recall that.
And I'm curious, you know, you've been in education before, and your wife's a teacher now, right? I'll ask you the same question. Have you or your wife been part of a change in Missouri state standards?
I was on the MCIP review team for the Kansas City, Missouri School District at that time.
When was that?
That was in 2004, 2005, something like that.
So what did you do? I mean, what did that mean to be on?
I reviewed the efforts that the district was making in the subject of transportation, uh-huh. school safety, and trying to identify where we were coming up short in the standard and figuring out what path forward the district could take in order to meet the requirements.
So you were on a committee or something?
I was on a committee.
And in what school district?
Kansas City, Missouri School District.
Missouri Public Schools. And how many other committees in your district, do you think?
Say it again.
How many other committees were there? There was lots of different topics. We're going through the state standards, so you're not just considering transportation. You're considering lots of different things, right?
If I remember correctly, your in conclusion with this line of questioning ended up with, should Common Core be further discussed? I'll just go ahead and say that Common Core is a controversial issue that probably deserves to be discussed.
For the benefit of the members who weren't on the committee or who weren't there to recommend a candidate to the committee, what I asked Dr. Martin yesterday, if he had been part of a state's determination to change their standards, their state standards. And the doctor had spent a certain part of his career in Virginia, and that he had suggested, oh, yes, he very much had been involved, and he served on a committee, and there were numerous committees around the state, and there were committees of educators and lay people and parents and school boards and teachers, and that process took about 18 months. And all across the state, people weighed in, and at the end of that process, the state of Virginia adopted new state standards, which is very similar to how we've adopted our state standards. Time and time again, since someone felt we were compelled to have standards, which we certainly should, that's the process. The Senator from the 7th, sounds like he was part of the process in MCIP 4 or 5?
Probably a little bit before then, 3.
3. So that's how the state standards were changed back then. He was a member of a committee in a school district, and school districts all across the state had committees just like that, and parents had an opportunity to weigh in. Everybody had an opportunity to weigh in. And that's how, up until 2010, that's how the state of Missouri changed their state standards. But what changed in 2010 was that with the stroke of a pen of Director Nicastro, Governor Nixon, and with the approval of the board, was Missouri adopted the Common Core state standards. That's how they did it. Didn't take 18 months. There were no hearings. And for those of you on this floor today who were in the General Assembly, you didn't even hear about it. And I would venture to say that most of you heard about it for the first time last January, 2013. There's nothing more. We focus and emphasize education. We talk about it all the time. We run campaigns on it. The governor referenced that in his talking points. But in my mind, when it comes to education, there's nothing more important, and Senator, I'm going on here, and this is an inquiry, there's nothing more important in deciding what to teach our children, how to teach their children, and how well we teach our children. That's, Senator, is that the essence, you think?
Audible goals.
Yeah, that's the essence. What to teach them, how to teach them, and then hold ourselves accountable. How well do we do that? That didn't happen in 2010. Mr. Lenz actually is on the Board of Education, the Board of Ed at Lindbergh. Lindbergh's very board didn't even vote on Common Core standards until a month or two after we filed our Common Core bill last year. Very first time. There are some school boards today that have not voted on Common Core standards. There's one school board today, Senator from Newton. Their school board voted to relieve themselves of Common Core standards. Look, we can spend the rest of the session talking about Common Core standards, what they're teaching our students, is it the right thing? How they're teaching our students is the right way? How we're going to hold the educators accountable? Interesting note on the holding the educators accountable. Before Common Core standards were adopted in 2010, they had never been tried in any state. There'd never been a pilot program. It's two distinct theories of education amongst lots of other theories of education. But in 2012, for the very first time, a pilot program was created. It was called the State of New York. They implemented the standards, 2012-2013 school year. They tested the students. Students' scores collapsed. And this information became public. Secretary of Education, Duncan, who assures us these are not national standards, his first response was, well, you know, the pushback to Common Core is just a bunch of angry moms who found out their children aren't geniuses. Google this. This is a direct quote from the Department of Arnie Duncan. It's a bunch of angry suburban moms who found out their kids aren't geniuses. He's still walking that back. What happened a month ago, another interesting turn. In the state of Missouri, teachers union, administrators union, full support of Common Core. They've supported it since the standards were written. They support them. Support them now. A month ago, the state teachers union in New York voted to withdraw completely from Common Core. 600,000 teachers are represented by that union. 15% of the NEA's national membership teach in the state of New York. They voted to withdraw from Common Core completely. Education is what we all say we're here to do, focus on. It's children, it's families, it's success. I think that the experience that Dr. Martin had in Virginia with respect to the process, the 18-month process by which the state had everyone weigh in and they adopted standards, Missourians deserve exactly the same process. And I've obviously filed legislation to completely withdraw from Common Core, and it's not just withdraw and do what. The do what part is to do exactly what we've always done, which is to have all Missouri citizens weigh in and have an opportunity to take into consideration what we teach our kids, how we teach our kids, and how we make sure we get it done right.
Senator, I think that you have done a good job of articulating why Dr. John Martin is currently lay, because that's none of anything that you just said there, the current conditions and circumstances by which this board has to decide, he was not a part of, he is not an expert in. He was, you know, at home reading the same articles that the rest of us read from an outsider's perspective.
On the subject of Common Core, again, this is someone who's been on the committee for a month. He's an interim appointment, and he's likely
they've
to be.
Met yet.
Excuse me?
I don't think they've had their first meeting with him.
Well, no, he said he's been on since January. I asked him. And I said, well, what do you know about Common Core? And he said, nothing. So you're right. With respect to Common Core, he's who I want there. But is it remarkable that a guy who has a long list of history in education, who serves on numerous boards today related to education, certainly follows along with education and has spent all of 30 days on the most important education board we have in the state, he doesn't know. Well, why would he know? Because back in 2010, with a stroke of a pen, our governor and our director of education adopted Common Core standards. Thank you, Senator.
Further discussion. Senator from the 14th, what purpose do you rise?
Mr. President, I'd like to inquire of the senator from the 24th.
Senator from the 24th, do you yield?
Well, certainly.
He does. Proceed.
Thank you. Senator, as always, I have an appreciation for some of the things that you bring up, and they are very valid. While I do disagree with a few points, I'm not going to talk about those, but talk about where we do have agreement. And in that conversation, you're absolutely right that we were not part of the discussion of adopting Common Core as a General Assembly, period. We were not part of that.
Still haven't had a chance to weigh in.
And I can tell you, as a school board member, I'm doing my superintendent evaluation right now, and there are certain segments of the evaluation where we have to look at, are we implementing core initiatives and all of this kind of good stuff? Here's one question. Are we letting families know about what Common Core is, et cetera? And as a school board member, as I'm putting in the details of whether or not we are truly having this public conversation, the reality is that we're not. having
no,
this conversation?
Prior to last session, Senator, well, the bill I first filed was to withdraw from Common Core, and then I modified the bill to just mandate that the Department of Education in each of the 8 senatorial districts have a public hearing, which that bill, unfortunately, was not allowed to get through this body. Then it wasn't until that those in education saw us waking up to this idea that individual school districts and then the department themselves actually went out and scheduled meetings and allowed the public to come in. I would tell you that the idea I had for informational meetings is that they would be held with 2 weeks' notice, 8 congressional districts, and that Director DeCastro herself would be at each of the events. And as it turns out, what the department decided to do was they decided to do this to replicate my idea, but hold one event at the same time all around the state on the same day, same hours.
Well,
you had to, and then each individual local school district has decided to, some have offered them, some have not offered informational meetings. They're very controlled. The parents, the suburban moms, if you will, and the urban moms and the rural moms and dads, they understand when they've been kept in the dark, and they're very upset by the fact they've been kept in the dark. And again, I'm not here to debate necessarily what our Common Core standards. I think I disagree with what they are, but I think how they came to be.
Yes, and that's where you and I agree, because I am in a different position. And I do have, wearing two hats sometimes is difficult, because in some areas I wholeheartedly agree, and because of my experience on the school board now, I think differently. And, you know, I'm in conflict a lot, and I just have to be true for whatever position it is. But I also, regardless of how I stand here as a state senator, I agree that there hasn't been enough communication. You know, we're touching upon these appointees, but really what we should be focusing on is an appointee. The person who is at the top, Chris DeCastro, has been operating in the dark, absolutely. And regardless of what we feel about Common Core in our districts, we should have been a part of the conversation from the very beginning. I have had, and you and I share the Pattonville School District, we have had legislative conversations about what Common Core is really doing to that district and what Common Core is doing to other districts. Now, as a state senator, I know where I stand on the issue. As a school board member, I have a different opinion on where I stand on the issue. But I'm here in this body, and I have to represent one thing, but where we are in agreement is that there are too many things that are going on with the State Board of Education where people are not open enough, and they are doing things in the dark, and that is not why our taxpayer, that's not what our taxpayers expect. They want everything to be done in the light. They do not want any secrecy, and that is basically what Chris DeCastro has done. And we have had people who are sitting on that board who have just co-signed everything that she's ever said. And for any small group of people to make a determination that's going to impact our 500-plus school districts in the state, how dare them have the audacity to even do something like that. Regardless of how we feel about Common Core individually,
right,
everything should be done in the light. We should know exactly where people are coming from. And oh, by the way, Senator, you weren't in the Education Committee yesterday, but when they signed off for this waiver for Common Core,
yep,
we didn't know that a portion of No Child Left Behind is now, we're not even under that authority. I will tell you, wearing the hat as a school board member, I didn't even know that there are certain options that schools have when they got to a level 4 or 5 under No Child Left Behind. And in my legislation, I reenact that because Chris DeCastro et al. Made the decision that school districts wouldn't be able to have all of these different options if a school was failing and it had different complications. So we didn't even get to say in the matter whether or not we wanted to do the waiver or not. We did not get to be part of that.
As you know, it was by a stroke of a pen. There was no opportunity for any one person to weigh in on any direct or indirect consequence of adopting Common Core standards. What you're speaking to is that in exchange for a waiver of No Child Left Behind, the states were allowed to be granted a waiver in the dark, to the extent that they signed on at Common Core. In addition, the Race to the Top initiative that everyone was so desperate for, the $4.5 billion the government made part of the stimulus package, in order to apply, it was mandated that you have already adopted Common Core, when again, the standards had not even been written, more or less vetted in the state of Missouri.
Yeah, so again, in that area that you were speaking on in terms of transparency, I am in full agreement on you, even though the policy-wise, I differ in opinion. You know, we do need to make a statement. I think we have, all of us. Thank goodness for us. We're all from different parts of the state. We have different parties that we represent. But thank goodness for having a healthy conversation about the disgrace that's occurring right now in DESE and on the State Board of Education. Thank you so much, Senator.
Further discussion? Seeing none, Senator, you're recognized to close.
Thank you, Mr. President. I would just offer to this body that John Martin is a candidate of high character and independence, and he will do an excellent job, and I'd ask for his support. Thank you. I close.
Senator from the 7th renews his motion. All those in favor that motion shall prevail say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nay.
No.
The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. The motion carries. Senator from the 23rd.
Thank you, Mr. President. Have the messages from the governor been read? I'm sorry, Mr. President.
Senator from Newton.
Mr. President, without objection, Senator Gold, order business of message from the governor. I believe the messages are all withdrawal letters, and I would ask that the reading be waived and the message be printed in the journal.
Seeing no objection, the reading shall be waived and the messages shall be printed in the journal. Senator from the 23rd.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move that the appointments be returned to the governor. A copy of the withdrawal letter has been distributed and is on your desks.
You've heard the motion. Senator from Nottoway.
I'd like to inquire the senator from 23rd.
Senator from the 23rd, do you yield to an inquiry?
I do.
Proceed.
Thank you, Senator. I've looked through these. I am fine returning all of them except for Tim Dollar for the Conservation Commission. And so it's not my intent to stop the rest of them. I guess what we would need to do is pull him out, let the rest of them go, and we can have our discussion and debate on that.
Okay. We can do him separately.
Senator from the 24th.
To inquire the senator from the 23rd.
Senator from the 23rd, do you yield?
I do.
He does. Proceed.
Thanks for yielding, Senator. And I too had pondered about whether or not ponder would okay. be withdrawn. And I do appreciate, you know, we've had a series of conversations. I know that there was some consideration given. For those who don't know, that's a nominee that came before our committee, and he failed a vote 5-5. And there was some consideration given that the vote be reconsidered, and that required the chairperson to agree, and you held by that vote. I appreciate that.
Well, and the senator from Cape knew that it was a very controversial for the members and did not want to add further division and strife to the on the Senate floor. So it was really he and I think, together decided that wasn't the best course of action.
Right, no, I do appreciate, but still, it was in your discretion. I very much appreciate that. And, you know, Mr. Ponder was an example of a layperson. He was he's a very accomplished, there's no doubt, very accomplished attorney from Cape. His numerous people speak highly of him. That's exactly what a layperson should be, quite frankly, and an accomplished person who you have confidence will make good decisions. In his time on the Board of Education, he had two really important decisions to make or not to make. And the one, both of which are very near and dear to me. One had to do with Common Core. So in his time on the board, they adopted Common Core. The second has to do with the issue that Senator 15 spoke of earlier today. Again, Mr. Ponder is an attorney. And so that's what you'd expect. He's bringing that expertise. That's why a layperson's there with that kind of expertise. The teachers aren't attorneys. They're educators. What do you do to fill out a board? You get somebody who has a different perspective on things. Mr. Ponder was an attorney. And I would posit, and I think the senator from the 15th agrees with me, is that what DESE's been doing these last few years with the reappropriation of state funding formula dollars is an illegal act. So, again, he's there.
Senator, are we still inquiring of one another?
Well, I'm almost done.
Okay.
Okay. Just and so, curious. Look, the case, I think I could stand today and make a very strong case for him not being put back, and he would be precluded from being renominated again. But Senator from the 23rd and I have had a good opportunity to discuss this matter, and I appreciate the working together with you on that issue, and I'm comfortable with not pulling him out. So thank you, Senator.
Senator from the 23rd.
Okay, thank you.
Would you like to withdraw your motion?
Yes, I'd like to make a new motion. I don't think I made my initial motion yet. Okay, but the motion I would like to make is that the appointments be returned to the governor with the exception... Oh, excuse me, you're right, I do have to withdraw. I apologize, Mr. President. New motion, move that the appointments be returned to the governor with the exception that the return of the appointment of Tim Dollars, a member of the Conservation Commission, be considered separately.
You've heard the motion from the senator from the 23rd. Any senator desire to speak on that motion? Senator from Nottoway.
Thank you, Mr. President. Over the last couple of weeks, we have watched as we've had different discussions around how do we get appointments done. We've had many members in this body try to interact and work with the second floor to get the resolution on numerous different appointments. Some of the members chose to step to the side to try to work with the second floor, and unfortunately, time and time again, they've just been... occasionally, it was resolved. More times than not, it has not been. Last year, over a year ago, there was an agreement made with the senator from the 18th about how we were going to deal with the Department of Conservation, and specifically some concerns he had in reference to the appointment that was up at that time. There were many of us involved in that process, many of us involved in that, in the what ultimately came to be the agreement that got, I believe it was Mr. Blair, ultimately put on. Unfortunately, those agreements have not been kept. We have continued down the road now, and many of us that have been in this building for a while, especially those of us who have been here for multiple, like 8 to 10 years, I remember when I first came in. When I first came in, there was a great fight between the Department of Conservation and some in this building who wanted to take their dedicated tax and sunset that tax. I've always been a person who has actually supported the department as a whole. I've often struggled, to be very honest, but there are only 4 people on that board. So the Conservation Commission is established of 4 people who have dedicated funding and have taken their articulation to us is that they stand outside of our purview. They come through the appropriations process, in their words, not mine, as a courtesy. We have now, earlier this week, lived through a situation where the senator from the 15th has put forward a resolution to deal with some JCAR challenges that he has found, for lack of a better term. And what he has put forward is what would be a constitutional vote put before the people to say that in a rulemaking process that the legislature, i.e. JCAR, would have the final authority to review rules. During this, and everyone up to date had been working to try to get that done, we thought we were there. During the hearing earlier this week, for the first time in my 12 years here, I've heard some of the most arrogant and condescending testimony I have ever seen. There was an individual from the Conservation Federation that came and essentially said this: the commissioners of the Conservation Commission are outside of your purview. Once you confirm them, they can do anything they want. And we do not believe that the legislature or anyone else in this state should have the right to stop them. So they essentially are going to oppose, or they are currently opposing, the idea that JCAR is an institution that is put in place to protect the people. So we can agree to disagree on that. Now, my feeling of what is going to happen, although I don't agree, but I think this is going to be the only way through, my guess is that we're going to exempt the Department of Conservation from JCAR rulemaking because we don't want someone there to oppose it. My point is this: the people that we put on this Conservation Commission, they have to be people who will always put the state first. They can't be partisan. They can't be people that have personal, that will put personal issues above what's right for the state as a whole. And unfortunately, all of this has come to a head right now. So we have a challenge with, and during that same hearing, the Department of Conservation came and also testified in opposition to JCAR or any type of legislative oversight. So, although they were much more polite and diplomatic about it than the previous person, the reality is this. We're at a crossroads, and we all watch whether we agree or disagree with what's happening in Washington. The reality is I believe we have an executive branch that continues to take more and more power, leaving a legislative branch in the balance and continuing every day to lose authority. We have a judicial branch that has been on a run for a decade and is, in my opinion, taking more ground today than they've ever taken before. And every day, we here come in here to try to do what's right. And whether we always agree or disagree, the reality is this. We stand before the people. The House, they stand before them every 2 years. We stand before them every 4 years. And I believe, in my heart of hearts, that this is the institution, and typically the Senate, because of the way that we operate, that ultimately has to decide, and we have to navigate the 34 different personalities and perspectives that are in this room to how do we get the public policy that we can live with. We may not love, but we can live with. What we have before us today is an appointment, in my opinion, that should not happen. And typically, these appointments, we just send them back and they're over. But what we have seen out of this governor is the tendency to take them and send them right back. And typically, and this individual is political enough and gives enough that if this governor doesn't put him on, a future governor will. And I believe that is not right. I do not believe it's right that the executive branch can make an agreement with a sitting member of this body and then change it. I do not believe it's right that the Conservation Commission believes that they don't have to have any oversight by JCAR or anyone else here. And I don't believe it's right that we can continue to let this happen. So what we are doing here today is a bold step. It is dramatic. It is not something that happens often. But let us be clear, at some point, the legislative body has to decide whether or not we are willing to stand up and exercise our strength in those opportunities. So I believe that right now we are about to restore, if nothing else, symbolically, that we as a legislature are willing to stand and say stop when things aren't going right. And so with that, I would ask the members of this body to join me in defeating the return of Tim Dollar and that appointment to the governor. With that, Mr. President, I'd like to inquire the senator from the 18th.
Senator from the 18th, you yield to an inquiry.
I do.
He does. Proceed.
Thank you, Senator.
Thank you. Senator, you and I have been living through this situation for a while. Over a year ago, actually a year and a half ago, you actually went and voiced your concerns. And unfortunately, we all thought, an agreement had been reached by which we were going to be able to move forward. Unfortunately, that has not happened. And I wanted you to articulate and share with the body, you know, what you've worked through and the challenges and some of the meetings that you've had where you've just been flat out threatened by, if you don't do this, we're coming after you in the election. I mean, that is what really put me over the top. When they decided they were going to start threatening you, that's when a term-limited guy, it's pretty easy to stand up and drop the gauntlet.
Yes, Senator. You know, and I'm not the only one in here that's had this issue with the governor, being promised one thing and then I'm not upholding to his promise. You know, down here, that's what we've got. We've got trust. You say you're going to do something, you do it. In this case, it didn't happen. In this case specifically, or what you're talking about with this particular letter, this is squarely on the shoulder of the governor because he could have fixed this. He could have withdrawn. He could have made another appointment earlier. Actually, you know, as trying to work with the governor, though, I did let another person through. We actually did that today. I held it up for a week. The governor did come and visit with his staff. His staff did come and visit with me earlier this week. Said they were looking at another person. But I just texted his staffer a while ago, and I still, or probably 2 hours ago and still haven't gotten any information, whether they're proceeding. You know, like I say, he could have worked on this. So I say it's squarely on the shoulders of the governor. But I did work with him. I let another person on the Conservation Commission, which was really not the deal. The deal was the next one. It's been over 35 years since we've had anybody from North Missouri. 35 years to a four-person board. Missouri is very diverse. Actually, I think we should have more people on that board. A four-person board representing all of Missouri. I'm like you, Senator. I heard you praise the department. They actually do some good things.
You bet.
I've been very supportive of a lot of things they do. But for them to be separated from the rest of government and be unbeholden to anything, the legislature or anybody else in the state. And you know, another curious thing that I found out as we was looking into this, they have no quorum conditions. They don't even have to have a quorum.
So in theory, if one person shows up to a Conservation Commission meeting, meaning one of the four commissioners, under their rules anyway, they could go ahead and have the meeting.
That is exactly what we found out, yes. If you look at the Constitution, there's no quorum requirement, and that's how this commission is set up. I think there need to be some changes in that, and actually I do have I had a SJR 2 years ago to expand that commission to 8 members instead of just 4. I think it would be a lot better. Missouri is very diverse in wildlife. And probably of anybody in this whole body, I enjoy the wildlife that we have in the state. Hunting, fishing, it's great.
So, Senator, the question is, you have worked through this with the second floor, as we've worked, because we've been in this building together for 12 years now. We've tried to work with conservation. One of our colleagues when we were in the House, John Quinn, filed the bill every year to shut them down and sunset the sales tax. And the question I have for you is this. If you have visited with the Conservation Commission about changing it from 4 members to 8 members, what kind of feedback have you received?
Well, it was 2 years ago when I actually heard that bill in committee that expanded it from 4 members to 8. And it was really the Conservation Federation came in and did very much like what you were alluding to happened in the committee the other day. Come in very arrogant and condescending of the legislature and really of rural Missouri and farmers. And actually, I farm. If there's anybody in this state that takes care of wildlife 24/7, 365, it's those of us out there in the country that raise the crops, that feed the deer, that feed all of the other wildlife that we have. But yet, the people that came in and testified, one in particular, was very condescending of farmers.
You know, one of the more challenging and more frustrating stories that I have about the Department of Conservation, probably about 5 to 6 years ago now, up in DeKalb County, Missouri, there was an agent up there that was loved. This guy was involved in the community. He did a radio show every week. He just really got out and promoted conservation, worked with the youth, just was an outstanding person. And there were a couple folks up the chain of command in the Department of Conservation that didn't like him because he wouldn't do all the silly stuff they made him do.
Because he was a good one.
And so what he wasn't there to write tickets. He was there to actually interact and help people. And, you know, they went after him. And long story made short, they finally fired him. And there was a community outcry. And so myself and at the time the state rep from there sat down with the department and shared our concern that you can't have this many citizens that are that upset and there not be something wrong. And the department said it's no big deal. Brad, Senator Lager, it's fine. We assure you. Long story made short, we had no resolution here because there was no way for us to get their attention. And you know what happened? That individual ended up having to sue. They went through a lengthy, expensive court battle, and when it was done, the court proved that the two supervisors had made up all of the stuff. It was all a bunch of lies. They had already terminated him, ruined his life, the whole deal. and there was no recourse. Now, that individual went on, if I remember right, to go to work for the Highway Patrol.
That's
or
correct.
Something like that. But unfortunately, they literally ruined his life because he was more about working with people in the community than punishing people. And that was my first real uncomfortable moment with them. But what we have now is we've had what I believe to be discussions around how do we better that, how do we better the Conservation Commission by expanding it to represent all parts of the state. It's been nothing but defiance. And this idea that three people know best, all due respect, I
could
just
be
disagree.
One.
Or it could be one. I just disagree, because, and I tell you why I say that. The perspective that I have in Northwest Missouri is different than my colleagues from St. Louis. You know what? Whenever that the charge of the Department of Conservation is to balance all of that. And when we have this two from here or two from here and no geographical balance, it's tough. So I am beyond frustrated. I am beyond the point of actually thinking that we can get resolution here. But I do believe this. By stopping this return, two things are happening. We're sending a very clear message. We're tired of it. It's over. And we're not putting up with it anymore.
And Senator, like I said earlier, this is squarely on the shoulders of the governor, because he could have upheld his agreement and made any change to make it happen. But instead of doing that, he kind of thumbed his nose.
So, Senator, I want to do two things here. When I end this inquiry, the senator from the 23rd reminded me, we are actually on the motion of the list as a whole. So I want him to go ahead and confirm those or send all of those people back, which I'm comfortable with, and then we'll continue our discussion about the Department of Conservation.
Thank you, Senator.
So with that, thank you. Mr. President, I will sit down so we can finish. I believe the motion pending is the motion on the full list. Okay, thank you.
That is correct. Senator from the first, for what purpose do you rise?
Mr. President, may I inquire of the senator from Lewis?
Yes. Senator from Lewis, you yield to an inquiry.
I do.
He does. Proceed.
And I realize we are still on the motion of the senator from the 23rd, but I will tell you I am very torn on this motion, and so I want to have the conversation with you and then probably have the conversation with him about this. You know, at the start of the day this morning, I announced a special guest, Amy Stovall, and it just so happens that her aunt and uncle are constituents of yours and dear friends of mine, Ron and Elsie Gaber, who you may know through A.T. Still University. You know them, don't you, Senator?
I've known Elsie, actually, when I was first elected to the House. She worked with the chamber or something there with Kirksville and was down here. I think it was one of the first events I went to as a state representative.
Elsie Gaber was an academic advisor at then Northeast Missouri State when I was an 18-year-old freshman on that campus, and I will tell you is on the very short list of among the more significant mentors that I have ever known in my life. She is a dear friend. Her niece is a dear friend.
That is a hardworking family that works very hard for the Kirksville and Northeast Missouri area.
They've done a lot in the community. And here's why it's relevant to this discussion. I was up here one day in early December during the interim, random day, and it just so happened that Ron Gaber was in the building. And he took the time to stop by my office and say to me, "Scott, it's been 35 years since we in North Missouri have had a member on the Conservation Commission. And that's just not right. Conservation, the work of the Conservation Commission is terribly important to your district and to the people you represent, is it not?"
The whole state, Senator. And, you know, and we're very diverse as a state as to what each area has.
But it's particularly important to North Missouri.
Oh, definitely.
Could you expound on that? I mean, could you just explain to members of the body why that's so important? And frankly, for anybody in the administration who might be listening, why could you please explain why we really need to have that voice at the table on the Conservation Commission?
Well, really, you know, Northeast Missouri, we are very diverse as a part of Northeast Missouri because we have a lot of timber, we have a lot of cropland. So we have a wide variety of wildlife, probably the widest in the state. We don't have elk, which really nobody up there wants elk because of crop destruction. But as far as pheasants, quail, rabbits, squirrel, you name it, we've got it. We've got a lot of streams that you can catch fish in. We've got a lot of fur bears that people trap. It's very important. We also have a lot of areas up there that would be good tourist destinations that they could come to. We've got a lot of conservation areas that people could visit. And during deer season, Northeast Missouri is swamped, and that we raise some really nice deer. My daughter was very fortunate this year to actually land a very nice buck that, you know, she's getting mounted and going to be very proud to hang it on her wall. But we also, as people from rural Missouri, rely on wildlife as a source of our food a lot of times. Actually, Senator, I went to a wildlife feed Saturday night. And I really hate to say this, but the best thing on the whole spread was groundhog. You know, I was really hesitant about trying it, but a sweet teriyaki sauce really set it off.
Well, there were some folks who kind of had it out for groundhogs after this weekend. Groundhog's not terribly popular right about now, and we've seen this week the fruits of that, haven't we?
That is true. That is very true.
Well, I could not agree with you more. I feel very strongly about it, and that's exactly why I'm torn on this.
Like I say, the governor could have righted this all along. When you make an agreement, and I'm sure you agree with me, when we agree to something, we try to stand by it.
35 years is too long for North Missouri to have gone without representation on the Conservation Commission. I could not agree with you more. Thank you, Senator. And with that, Mr. President, may I inquire of the senator from Nottoway?
Senator from Nottoway, do you yield to an inquiry? He does. Proceed.
Thank you for yielding. I know that we're sure. All anxious to move forward. And
that's fine.
We have spent more time this morning on gubernatorial appointments than probably my entire Senate tenure to date combined.
Sure.
And that's appropriate. We've taken up some very important things, and this is terribly important.
Well, and during your time here, Senator, you will vote to approve hundreds, if not 1,000, people to different boards and commissions that make rules and regulations, and this stuff matters.
It does. And to that point, I'm in basically the second month of my second year in the Senate. You're in the second month of your eighth and final year in the Senate.
Wonderful place to be, Senator.
And you have been around this block many more times than I. And I appreciate the benefit of your perspective and experience in that regard. I agree not only with the senator from Lewis's concerns for North Missouri constituency you and he both represent. I also share your concerns about checks and balances between this body and the Conservation Commission. I strongly agree with you about that. And I also note and acknowledge your point that the individual in question is politically involved, more so perhaps than most people that we have before us.
He wins more than loses. He does. I mean, he is a smart guy and puts his, well, as we have all witnessed, and we've all been in the middle of races where people have helped us a lot, he when he goes in, he puts all the chips in. So you've got to respect that in many ways.
Well, and what I would say, hopefully we can also agree he's committed to conservation. He is.
You know, I don't know him, Senator. I have literally met him one time, and unfortunately it was not a good interaction, but I cannot in good faith tell this body that I know him.
Sure, I understand, and I can say that I do, and I will tell you the man is an outdoorsman who has a farm.
Yep.
I mean, he cares about these issues. I agree with the concerns that you and the senator from Lewis have articulated. I am nonetheless personally reluctant to single out one appointment from this list for a host of different reasons. That said, as I understand your concern is that if we fail to do that, there is nothing that precludes. If he's withdrawn, he could potentially be put right back on the Monday morning.
Yep. Or let's even say that we get to an agreement with this governor that, hey, listen, we're not doing this anymore. But, hey, next governor throws him right on. I mean, as you and I know, and I actually respect him from this, he has been when the attorney general was here, he was kind enough to open up his law practice to to give the Attorney General the flexibility to pass cases there, whatever you want to call it, so that he could actually earn a living while he served here. I respect any business owner that's willing to give that level of flexibility so that individuals associated and or employed by them can come and serve in public service. That is a noble cause. But with that said, I still believe that at some point, Senator, it is going to take dramatic action for us to send a very clear message, and I don't know how this body gets more dramatic than this.
And I appreciate that, and I might even agree with much of that. My concern is that by not allowing his name to be withdrawn, that's a pretty big deal. I mean, that would preclude him from serving on the commission in the future. Would it not preclude him from other forms of service as well?
Nothing else, just this commission.
I appreciate your concern. I'm reluctant to support the motion, but I want to make it very clear that I understand where you're coming from and where the Senator from Lewis is coming from.
And I respect your position completely, Senator.
I would prefer to see us withdraw all of the names on the list, and I'll leave it at that. Thank you, Senator.
Thank you.
Further discussion. Senator from the 4th, what purpose do you rise?
To inquire the Senator from the 18th.
Senator from Lewis, you yield to an inquiry.
I do.
He does. Proceed.
Yes. Thank you, Senator. I'll just be very brief so we can move on with this thing. Tim Dollar never made a commitment to you, did he?
No, and I have nothing personally against him, really. It's like I said, this squarely falls on the shoulders of the governor. He could have righted this wrong and stayed to his word.
I don't disagree with that. If I would be madder than a wet hornet, too, if someone did that. But Tim Dollar didn't do that, did he? So now we're in a position, we're about to make a vote that is going to preclude him from saving on a commission that he really wants to serve on for something that he never did. You know what they call that in my neighborhood? That's a drive-by shooting.
You know, Senator, I've actually told both of the people that the governor put forward when he violated my trust with his appointments. I've talked to both of them, said I did not hold anything personally against them, but the governor needed to make things right.
I don't disagree with that, but you let him withdraw.
Senator, at that I say, how do we get the governor to understand that this is the power of the Senate that we have in confirming people and letting people be put forward on appointments to commissions and boards and directorships? If we can't use a sledgehammer, a wedge, or something else to drive that point home, we had a great lengthy discussion here on education earlier.
Right.
That, you know,
so how did Tim Dollar
sometimes there?
How did Tim Dollar work himself into this position where he's going to be the sacrificial lamb?
I think he got caught in the middle.
So now we've got this body being, this is retribution is what this is, right? This is a putative action for something, from really an innocent bystander for a commitment that the governor may, I don't know the details of what the governor promised and what he didn't, but your perceived feeling of being shortchanged or slighted by the governor, correct?
I was slighted by I still feel like I was slighted by the governor. I've tried to work with him. I actually, like I said earlier, I've let the one person go onto this commission today in a vote we made earlier, and yet I still haven't heard any news. But he's had a long time to work on this.
And we've got
very qualified people all around this state to serve on a lot of boards and commissions. Very qualified people to serve on a lot of boards. But unfortunately, it doesn't seem like we can look in all the areas of the state to pick people for these boards. Some of these seem to be concentrated in certain areas.
I don't dispute any of that. I'm not familiar with the details. I'm not prepared to argue that. And I don't want to argue that with you. But it's one thing to block the guy from getting on the board. It's another thing to block him for life.
And it's just on this commission.
Yep. So, I mean, if you want to, if we want to block them, that's fine. I have no problem with that. But I don't, I think it's unfair to hold a third party responsible for the transgressions of somebody else and then to penalize him from serving on a commission that he wants to serve on.
I think the governor can finally probably find other commissions or boards to put, that he'll put him on.
Well, thank you, Senator.
Senator from the 7th, for what purpose do you rise?
Mr. President, to inquire the senator from the 12th.
Senator from Nottoway, you yield.
I do.
He does. Proceed.
Good afternoon, Senator. Senator, I appreciate the way this body functions. I have a great deal of respect for the deference that each one of the senators show each other and the way that we're able to work through very difficult ideological pieces of legislation, and we do it in a way that I'm proud of. But this is just wrong. This is wrong. This is not statesmen being statesmen. This is playing the leverage that you see available to try to get an outcome that's disassociated with this individual. Do you have any reason to believe any articulable facts of evidence that Tim Dollar is unqualified for this position or that he'll be derelict in his duties on the commission?
I do not believe Tim Dollar should be on this commission, but I'm not going to stand on this floor and publicly defame any private member of this state.
No, but you're willing to ask this body to place a lifetime ban on an individual who is passionate about public service and passionate about this particular issue to get accomplished something that you've been unable to do absent of this action. And
Senator, get it. We disagree. Got it. Duly noted. I'm not going to stand here and fight with you. That's not. If you want to stand here and argue, that's fine. If you want to filibuster it, that's fine. Then we'll just lay it over, and the same action occurs. We're in a spot. There is no turning back here.
I just believe that you've chosen to make a punitive action against an otherwise good citizen and capable individual, and you're using it for perceptual political gain against circumstances that this individual had nothing to do with.
Well, I hear your feelings. I disagree with those feelings. But this body is about the ability to respectfully disagree.
All right, Mr. President, can I inquire of the senator from the 10th?
Senator from the 10th, do you yield to an inquiry?
I do.
She does. Proceed.
Senator, I appreciate you taking my inquiry. You were also in the last months of an 8-year career here. Have you ever seen this body take action that's punitive against any individual because of ulterior political goals?
Been here a long time, Senator. I'm trying to remember everything we've done in the last 8 years. I will tell you, I don't remember us singling someone out from a list and saying that they could not ever serve on that commission again. Not in my memory, but it's possible that it's happened. I agree with you, Senator. I agree that there are ways to send a message to the governor that don't involve making a lifetime ban for someone who's willing to give their time and energy back to a state commission. But I don't remember seeing that since I've been here.
What do you believe the precedent that we would be setting here today? That gubernatorial appointments are pawns to be played for higher purposes, higher political gains, or establishment of balance of power between branches? Is this something that we're going to see become a part of what we do here in this body?
Here's my concern about the fallout from what could happen here today. It is becoming increasingly difficult to find individuals who are willing to put their name out there to be on different boards and commissions. I think that there's been a general consensus in this chamber over the last few months, if not few years, that we actually have too many commissions to begin with, and we need to start to work on narrowing that down. But for those commissions that do need to stay in place, I think we need to make it so that citizens are more interested in putting their names in. It's already an incredibly difficult process. The application alone to serve on one of these boards or commissions is quite lengthy and onerous. then you put in front of the individuals that have to go through the advice and consent the possibility that they'll get caught up in some sort of political discussion outside of why they got involved in the first place. I think eventually what we're going to end up doing is we're going to have less and less folks who are willing to put themselves out there because of the, you know, frankly, the chance that they're going to get caught in political crossfire. So I am not in favor of doing anything that will result in fewer Missouri citizens being willing to serve their government. That's why I don't support holding back Mr. Dollar's name. I am in full support if there are senators who want to, you know, obviously block his name from being considered. That's fine, but a lifetime ban seems extreme. And I think that it's unreasonable, and it's not how I would handle it if I were in the same situation.
Thank you, Senator. I may come back to you with further question. President, can I inquire of the Senator from the 8th?
Senator from the 8th, do you yield to an inquiry?
I do.
He does. Proceed.
I'm trying to wait until we were actually
on. But, Senator, I think that this is so egregious that if we vote on the other slate right now, it makes it easier to lay that one over. So I think that if I'm going to hold the floor, I'm going to hold it on all of them.
Okay.
And
I understand where you're coming from, Senator. I don't think that all these people should be blocked. I don't think Tim Dollar should be blocked either. I have an inquiry I'd like to make with the senator from Lewis. I've had individual conversations with Mr. Dollar on numerous occasions. He happens to be a Democrat, not necessarily on my party affiliation, but I know him to be a good, honest citizen, and I know he wants to do the right thing. I know he's a person that likes to get out in the conservation areas and hunt and do those kind of things.
Well, this for me, this is not about Tim. You know, Mr. Dollar is well qualified for this position. I know he's passionate about conservation. To block his nomination to the Conservation Commission is unfortunate for the state because he'll do a good job. But that's not what this is about. This is about using this process to leverage actions by other entities that have nothing to do with this individual. And I think that if we follow through on this and we set this precedent, then it's just going to be whichever senator decides that they're going to try and put a lifetime ban on somebody to get a policy action in another area that has nothing to do with that individual will become, you know, open the floodgates on it. And I think that right now we have an obligation to the process, to the body, to the future of how we conduct ourselves as statesmen, to not let this happen. And I wanted to get your opinion as his sponsor, if I wanted to understand where you were on it and the discussions that you had in sponsoring this individual to this commission. Were you aware that this was potentially going to happen when you decided to sponsor him? Was this ever discussed?
No. He called me and asked me if I'd sponsor him. I said we talked at that point about what he does as far as hunting and the fact that he loves the nature in the state of Missouri and the fact that he likes to be out in the wilderness. And we talked about his qualifications, if you will, to serve on this commission. And so in that discussion, I felt that he was qualified, and I decided that I would sponsor him.
Okay. And so what we're doing right now, this lifetime ban.
I disagree with the lifetime ban. I think that, once again, I have articulated that I believe that he would serve well on this commission, and I think it's wrong for us to do lifetime bans unless for some reason the individual has done something wrong. I think it's there for us to do in a rare occasion, but I don't think this is one of the situations that I would use it on. He did not talk to the senator from Lewis. He did not talk to the governor about, you know, getting in front of somebody else. This is directed to him. And I don't think it's unjust. I understand where the other senators are coming from, trying to send a message to the governor. If this conversation with Senator Lewis actually took place, I can understand where he would be frustrated and would block an appointment to the Conservation Commission. But I don't think a lifetime ban would be the right way to go.
I think it's a terrible precedent that we would be setting here today. Thank you, Senator. Mr. President, can I inquire the senator from the 23rd?
Senator from the 23rd does not appear to be in the chamber. He is in the chamber. He's making his way back to his desk. Senator from the 23rd, do you yield to an inquiry?
Yes.
He does. Proceed.
Thank you, Senator. I appreciate you taking my inquiry. How many How many candidates are currently being withdrawn in this current motion that
we're on? Let's see here. 1, 2, 3, 4. 22 is the motion that is before us.
And that does not include Mr. Dollar?
Right. He would be the 23rd.
22. And what would happen if these 22 were not allowed to be withdrawn? Would they all get lifetime bans?
I guess that is the interpretation that I'm getting.
And what's the clock? How long before that withdrawal would need to take place before the ban would go into effect?
It's 30 days. What's Friday?
Friday. How do you have a perspective on what's transpiring here with this tactic?
I have been working with the governor's office and with Senator from Lewis because I believe that a commitment was made to him last year when Blair was under consideration that the next appointee would come from northern Missouri. We have a discussion about whether that would meant north of the river or north of 70. I can't remember which. But the senator from Lewis, I know, said the farther north, the better. Okay.
Well, I mean, I'd be happy to go on record saying I support the senator from Lewis's position.
Okay. And so my decision to not move forward on Tim Dollar was not related to the qualifications of Tim Dollar. Okay? That appointment was held in my office because of what I believe was a promise made to the senator from Lewis, okay, and that,
no,
and so that is my involvement in related to this Conservation Commission appointment.
Well, I can certainly respect the desire to see the commitments upheld and promises made outside of this chamber. Individual senators, when they're told something,
and I was present when some of that discussion was happening. I know I've had, well, had other. I try to, as the chair of the committee or the president of the Senate, I do try to work with every member where I believe they have valid concerns, and there were other concerns on other appointments by both Republicans and Democrats, and I did my best to try to work with any member that had a valid request or concern. In my communication with the governor's office and his staff.
Do you feel that Tim Dollar is responsible for the promise being broke to the senator from Lewis?
No.
You think that it's an appropriate action to provide him a lifetime ban because of the promise that was broken to the senator from Lewis?
I put his name forward. He is on this list to be withdrawn. I was comfortable with him being his appointment being withdrawn and potentially his ability to be reconsidered at some later date by that action.
What estimation do you make for the precedent we're setting here today?
Well, my able staff has found a 2002 precedent where this actually did occur, where Senator Matthewson made a request, and Senator Kinney made a motion. So Senator Matthewson's moved that the appointment of this individual be returned, and then there was another senator moved that motion lay on the table, and then the Senator Jacob rose to be recognized to speak on the motion. Senator Kinney raised the point of order that under provision of Senate Rule 72, a motion to lay on the table is not debatable. And then the final action was the point of order was referred to the Senate President Pro Tem, who took it under advisement.
And so in that instance, that person who was withdrawn had a lifetime ban for whatever they were?
Well, that motion lay on the table. So.
Okay. Mr. President, can I inquire of the Senator from the 4th? Thank you.
Senator from the 4th, you yield to an inquiry.
I do.
He does. Proceed.
Thank you. Senator, earlier you mentioned that they're making Mr. Dollar a sacrificial lamb, that his lack of involvement in the higher political effort that they're trying to accomplish here was not present, and you referred to it as a drive-by shooting in your district. What, as a lawyer, what do you think the precedent that we're setting here today could potentially have impacts on this body for years to come.
Well, even not so much as a lawyer. I mean, we could go through this exercise every week to make retribution on the appointment on the appointments list that we go through. I think it's a very dangerous precedent to set. I agree with you. If this action were to continue for the reasons that it's continuing, I think it is a very, very poor reflection on the body as a whole.
When do you think that the inappropriateness of this action today would be invoked? Why wouldn't we do this for every demand that everybody has, for every policy? Let's just hold up. You know, and in fact, I remember the senator from the 12th had a conversation with the senator from the 5th about the appropriateness of using the gubernatorial process for exterior motives. And I thought that was a very well-received and thoughtful and statesman position to take. But now I'm seeing that practice not being invoked.
Right. What you're seeing is a double standard, I guess you'd say.
Perhaps.
I think it reflects very, very poorly on the body as a whole if it were to succeed.
What would happen if you and I held this floor for the next 5 hours and
I'd miss the hockey game.
Miss the hockey game.
That
would be unfortunate. But justice might be served for us not to commit this egregious act of providing a lifetime ban for an individual that had nothing to do with the grievance that the senator from the 12th and the senator from the 18th currently have.
I agree with you. It's a very, very, it's a slippery slope that we go down because, you know, we're going to have this discussion every week when it could be miscommunication, it could be deliberate, a deliberate act mislead somebody.
The problem here is that this didn't have anything to do with Mr. Dollar.
That's right.
If this was because they believed that he was somehow incompetent or unqualified, and it wasn't, he was so unqualified that they don't ever want to be appointed again, and it was about him, and they were putting a lifetime ban on him because of what he has done or what he is unable to do, that's something entirely different than saying that a commitment was made to somebody else that had nothing to do with this, so we've chosen to make this person the scapegoat, and we're going to make punitive actions against this individual to teach someone else a lesson that this person had nothing to do with.
Yep.
So by that standard, if this body allows this to go forward today, by that standard, we could just pick anybody from any slate and say, I didn't get what I wanted in committee, so I'm going to put a lifetime ban on this individual that you might care about because you didn't let a bill come out of committee.
Well, the end result is going to be all the high-profile guys get knocked off. All the guys that really bring something to the table that people are aware of, they all get held hostage until you get what you want. Otherwise, they're never going to serve anything.
What do you think if we were to hold and they laid over this slate, what's the consequence of that? Do we know if they were to lay over this entire slate, would all 22 of them get the lifetime ban?
I think all 22 would get a lifetime ban because we have to confirm them by, I think, the 8th. I think it's the 8th. And we're not meeting.
Do you think any of the 22 that are currently in front of us have anything to do with the promise that was not kept to the senator from Lewis?
Oh, none of them do.
None of them do. So they're all basically in the same boat that Mr. Dollar's in terms of what their involvement with why the consternation has been created. Why single out just Mr. Dollar? Why not hold all 22 and make all 23 of them, as it were, and put a lifetime ban on everybody?
Well, you're going to have to talk to the sponsor.
I'm just saying the logic doesn't make any more or less sense.
I agree with that. There is no logic to what's occurring here.
You know, I think I would like to hear from every senator on this matter today. I think that every senator should at least have an opportunity to express what they feel this body's action will set in terms of precedent. So I thank you for inquiring. I'm going to start with the senator from the 34th.